25. The Aiduru.
How do you mean she's here? Laney asked Yamazaki as they rounded the rear of the Sherman tank. Clots of dry clay clung to the segments of its massive steel treads.
Mr. Kuwayama is here, Yamazaki whispered. He represents her.
Laney saw that several people were already seated at a low table. Two men, a woman. The woman must be Rei Toei. If he'd anticipated her at all, it had been as some industrial-strength synthesis of Japan's last three dozen top female media faces. That was usually the way in Hollywood, and the formula tended to be even more rigid in the case of software agents, Aijin heads, their features algorithmically derived from some human mean of proven popularity. She was nothing like that. Her black hair, rough-cut and shining, brushed pale bare shoulders as she turned her head. She had no eyebrows, and both her lids and lashes seemed to have been dusted with something white, leaving her dark pupils in stark contrast. And now her eyes met his. He seemed to cross a line. In the very structure of her face, in geometries of underlying bone, lay coded histories of dynastic flight, privation, terrible migrations. He saw stone tombs in steep alpine meadows, their lentils traced with snow. A line of shaggy pack ponies, their breath white with cold, followed a trail above a canyon. The curves of the river below were strokes of distant silver. Iron harness bells clanked in the blue dusk. Laney shivered, in his mouth a taste of rotten metal. The eyes of the Aiduru, envoy of some imaginary country, met his.
We're here.
Arlie beside him, hand at his elbow. She was indicating two places at the table.
Are you all right?
She asked under her breath.
Take your shoes off.
Laney looked at Blackwell, who was staring at the Aiduru, something like pain in his face, but the expression vanished, sucked away behind the mask of his scars. Laney did as he was told, kneeling and removing his shoes, moving as if he were drunk or dreaming, though he knew he was neither, and the Aiduru smiled, lit from within.
Laney?
The table was set above a depression in the floor. Laney seated himself, arranging his feet beneath the table and gripping his cushion with both hands.
What? Are you okay?
Okay.
You looked blind.
Rez was taking his place now at the head of the table, the Aiduru to his right. Someone else, Laney saw that it was Lo, the guitarist, to his left. Next to the Aiduru sat a dignified older man with rimless glasses, gray hair brushed back from his smooth forehead. He wore a very simple, very expensive-looking suit of some lusterless black material and a high-collared white shirt that buttoned in a complicated way. When this man turned to address Rei Toei, Laney quite clearly saw the light of her face reflect for an instant in the almost circular lenses. Arlie's sharp intake of breath. She'd seen it too. A hologram. Something generated, animated, projected. He felt his grip relax slightly on the edges of the cushion. But then he remembered the stone tombs, the river, the ponies with their iron bells. Nodal. Laney had once asked Gerard de Louvrier, the most patient of the tennis-playing Frenchmen of title, why it was that he, Laney, had been chosen as the first, and as it would happen, the only recipient of the peculiar ability they sought to impart to him. He hadn't applied for the job, he said, and had no reason to believe the position had even been advertised. He had applied, he told de Louvrier, to be a trainee service rep. De Louvrier, with short, prematurely gray hair and a sun-table tan, leaned back in his articulated workstation chair and stretched his legs. He seemed to be studying his crepe-soled suede shoes. Then he looked out the window to rectangular beige buildings, anonymous landscaping, February snow.
Do you not see how we do not teach you? We watch. We wish to learn from you.
They were in a Datamerica research park in Iowa. There was an indoor court for Delouvrier and his colleagues, but they complained constantly about its surface.
But why me?
Delouvrier's eyes looked tired.
We wish to be kind to the orphans. We are an unexpected warmth at the heart of Datamerica.
He rubbed his eyes.
No. Something was done to you, Lenny. In our way, perhaps, we seek to redress that. Is that a word, redress?
No, Lenny said.
Do not question good fortune. You are here with us, doing work that matters. It is winter in this Iowa, true, but the work goes on.
He was looking at Lenny now.
You are our only proof, he said.
Of what? Delouvrier closed his eyes.
There was a man, a blind man, who mastered echolocation. Clicks with the tongue, you understand.
Eyes closed, he demonstrated.
Like a bat. Fantastique.
He opened his eyes.
He could perceive his immediate environment in great detail, ride a bicycle in traffic, always making the tick, tick. The ability was his, was absolutely real, and he could never explain it, never teach it to another.
He wove his long fingers together and cracked his knuckles.
We must hope that this is not the case with you.
Don't think of a purple cow. Or was it a brown one? Lenny couldn't remember. Don't look at the Idaru's face. She is not flesh. She is information. She is the tip of an iceberg. No, an Antarctica of information. Looking at her face would trigger it again. She was some unthinkable volume of information. She induced the nodal vision in some unprecedented way. She induced it as narrative. He could watch her hands, watch the way she ate. The meal was elaborate, many small courses served on individual rectangular plates. Each time a plate was placed before Rei To'i, and always within the field of whatever projected her, it was simultaneously veiled with a flawless copy, hollow food, on a hollow plate. Even the movement of her chopsticks brought on peripheral flickers of nodal vision, because the chopsticks were information too, but nothing as dense as her features, her gaze. As each empty plate was removed, the untouched serving would reappear. But when the flickering began, Lenny would concentrate on his own meal, his clumsiness with his own chopsticks, conversation around the table. Kuwayama, the man with the rimless glasses, was answering something Rez had asked, though Lenny hadn't been able to catch the question itself.
The result of an array of elaborate constructs that we refer to as desiring machines.
Rez's green eyes, bright and attentive.
Not in any literal sense, Kuwayama continued, but please envision aggregates of subjective desire. It was decided that the modular array would ideally constitute an architecture of articulated longing.
The man's voice was beautifully modulated, his English accented in a way that Lenny found impossible to place. Rez smiled then, his eyes going to the face of the Idaru. As did Lainey's as well, automatically. He fell through her eyes. He was staring up at a looming cliff face that seemed to consist entirely of small rectangular balconies, none set at quite the same level or depth. Orange sunset off a tilted steel-framed window, oil-slick colors crawling in the sky. He closed his eyes, looked down, opened them. A fresh plate there, more food.
"You're really into your meal," Arlie said.
A concentrated effort with the chopsticks, and he managed to capture and swallow something that was like a 1-inch cube of cold chutney omelet.
"Wonderful. Don't want any of that fugu, though. Blowfish with the neurotoxins? Heard about that?"
"You've already had seconds," she said.
"Remember the big plate of raw fish arranged like the petals of a chrysanthemum?"
"You're kidding," Laney said.
"Lips and tongue feel faintly numb?"
"That's it."
Laney ran his tongue across his lips.
Was she kidding?
Yamazaki, seated to his left, leaned close.
"There may be a way around the problem you face with Rez's data. You are aware of low-res global fan activity?"
"Of what?"
"Many fans. They report each sighting of Rez, Low, other musicians involved. There is much incidental detail."
Laney knew from his day's video education that Low Rez were theoretically a duo, but that there were always at least two other members, usually more. And Rez had been adamant from the start about his dislike of drum machines. The current drummer, Blind Willie Jude, seated opposite Yamazaki, had been with them for years. He'd been turning his enormous black glasses in the Eideru's direction throughout the meal. Now, he seemed to sense Laney's glance. The black glasses, video units, swung around.
"Man," Jude said, "Rozzer's sitting down there making eyes at a big aluminum thermos bottle."
"You can't see her?"
"Hollows are hard, man,"
the drummer said, touching his glasses with a fingertip.
"Take my kids to Nissan County. I'll call ahead, get them tweaked around a little. Then I can see them. But this lady's on a funny frequency or something. All I can see is the projector and this kind of ectoplastic, right? Glow-like."
The man seated between Jude and Mr. Kuoyama, whose name was Ozaki, bobbed apologetically in Jude's direction.
"We regret this very much. We regret deeply. A slight adjustment is required, but it cannot be done at this time."
"Hey," Jude said, "no big problem. I've seen her already. I get all the music channels with these. That one where she's a Mongol princess or something, up in the mountains?"
Laney lost a chopstick.
"The most recent single," Ozaki said.
"Yeah," Jude said. "That's pretty good. She wears that gold mask? Okay shit."
He popped a section of maki into his mouth and chewed.